The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
In Italy, a terrible milestone. The death toll from COVID-19 in that country now more than 3,400, surpassing the death toll in China despite Italy's much smaller size.
427 more fatalities in just one day and a 15% increase in infections over yesterday. The curve just won't flatten.
40 million residents stay in place order. And then, of course, the American State Department, in the most unprecedented move I have seen ever, level 4 for travel advisory. That means, Nara, do not travel. It covers the entire world.
Passenger airlines are going to see about $50 billion in assistance here. Cargo airlines, about $8 billion. Other distressed industries is another category, $150 billion in there for them. The tax filing deadline extended now until July 15th. That's been confirmed. What else we're learning right now is that it's going to have a big piece of small business assistance here. It's going to have about $300 billion for small businesses.
My worry continually has been that the longer this goes on, the more we risk a series of deleveraging, a period of defaults that sticks with us long after this health crisis fades. Is that downside risk? Is that your base case now, Mohammed?
It is, unfortunately. People now realize that a recession is likely. It's a done deal. The global economy is going into recession. And the big question mark out there is how far will the financial deleveraging go? I hope my prediction is wrong, but I fear that we still are underestimating the depth of this recession that's going to hit the economy and what it's going to do to financial relationships, including a whole host of payments difficulty and defaults.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Volatility continues to hover over the financial markets. The Fed launches 3 new programs backstopping commercial paper markets, money market funds, and initiates currency swaps with major central banks around the globe. As Congress works on a $1 trillion package of stimulus this weekend, expected to be signed into law next week, and the state of California joins New York in a state of lockdown. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to Financial Sense News Hour. Art Hill will join me from Trend Investor Pro. Art talks about volatility now hitting the bond and gold markets, making reading charts difficult. He'll also talk about 3 indicators to watch when we're getting close to a market bottom. Later on in the program, Owen Tracy from Fuller Tracy Money will join me as modern monetary theory is launched in full force by governments globally. Coronavirus is temporary. Stimulus is limitless. Later on in the show, Chris Poplava and Chris Sheridan will bring you another edition of Smart Macro as we take a deep dive into the credit markets. But first, let's go to this week's market wrap-up with Ryan Poplava.
Thanks, Jim. As of Thursday, there were 10,442 cases of COVID-19 and tragically 150 deaths. New York is the hardest hit state with about 6,834 cases as of Thursday. So that's the start of where things are at. Let's kick things off with the policy steps by the Federal Reserve over the last weekend and also throughout this week as we've seen the Fed move aggressively to cut rates and provide liquidity, something we anticipated and discussed on the show last weekend, but you know they took that shock and awe approach on Sunday. The federal funds rate was reduced by 100 basis points to 0 to 0.25%. The Fed lowered the primary credit rate by 150 basis points to 0.25%, thus narrowing the spread between overnight funds. This longer-term credit facility allows really credit to flow easily by not creating that 50 basis point spread that was there before. So these funds can be held for up to around 90 days, I believe. Reserve requirements ratios have been reduced to 0% effective on March 26th. The Fed will purchase $500 billion of treasuries and at least $200 billion of agency mortgage-backed securities over the coming months, really bringing back QE in a big way. And the Fed has also coordinated U.S. dollar swaps with other central banks to make sure that there's ample liquidity in the currency markets. So all of that was on Sunday night to shock and awe the markets and I think scare the shorts away after Friday's emergency declaration by Trump that rallied stocks in the last hour. Unfortunately, it had a negative effect in that it exacerbated fears about the spread of the virus. Stock futures were limit down on Monday morning, and soon after that, we hit the first circuit breaker level of around 7%. The Dow fell on the day 12.9%, and the S&P fell 12%, and the NASDAQ also fell 12.3%, as confidence was lacking in both fiscal and monetary stimulus regarding the outlook for the economic growth and earnings. Apple had announced voluntary closures of stores. MGM Resorts and Wynn Resorts announced a shutdown of Vegas hotels and casinos. And the president recommended avoidance of gatherings of 10 or more. Finally, San Francisco issued orders for residents to stay inside, only to see the governor extend that to the rest of the state Thursday night. On Tuesday, the Federal Reserve established a commercial paper funding facility with around $10 billion of credit protection from the Treasury for that facility, able to backstop with purchases of unsecured and asset-backed commercial paper rated A1 and P1. They also announced an increase to the daily repos in the morning and the afternoon for the remainder of the week, around $500 billion each, in addition to the repos that were announced last week. So there's a lot of money floating around and ample liquidity to help in current financing needs. Thursday, the Federal Reserve established a money market mutual fund liquidity facility, with the Treasury funding another $10 billion for this facility. And this fund was designed to assist money market funds in meeting demands for redemptions. On Friday, this facility was expanded to make loans available to financial institutions secured by high-quality asset purchases from single state and other tax-exempt municipal money market mutual funds. On the other fiscal side, the Senate finally passed its version of a stimulus package of around $1 trillion, which is payments of around $1,000 for adults, $500 for kids, income threshold under discussion, a money for small business payroll, and loans to strategic industries not to be considered bailouts for reckless firms. The next steps now, basically for fiscal stimulus, is for the House and the Senate to negotiate and pass something together. Hopefully next week, as Speaker Nancy Pelosi had already hinted this week, the House Democrats are already at work to form a counteroffer. So the last thing I wanted to cover this week is the change in economic indicators, and it's clear to see travel restrictions are finally having their effect. The most telling is the jump in unemployment claims, which jumped by 70,000 to 281,000 as of the end of Thursday of last week. This is an early warning sign of probably a much bigger number in store for us in the next week or two, as businesses continue to stay closed up until from where it started in the middle of March to wherever we end up, you know, we don't know yet. The Philadelphia Fed Index dropped to -12.7 from a ramped up 36.7 increase in February. And so seeing this, finally, we're getting the monthly numbers for March, and they don't look good. They're heading into negative territory. Industrial production was up 0.6% in February, but this is obviously widely expected to reverse in March. Retail sales were surprisingly bad in February, down 0.5%. You know, the market was rebounding on the efforts of the Fed and the Senate throughout most of the week, but some of that was in check due to escalating restrictions such as those from California Governor Newsom and New York Governor Cuomo instilling 100% of the state's non-essential working force to stay home. We knew this was eventually probably coming. Here it is. For any of our clients listening in, you know, we have been stepping in to buy the market since Monday for clients taking a piece here and there where we see value. It will be too difficult really to time the bottom, but prices have discounted enough that we are starting to find some value and we are beginning to move our clients back towards their benchmark allocations.
FS Insider spoke with Martin Armstrong this week about what he sees with the market when he thinks a bottom is near and the massive damage that the quarantines are having upon the global economy, which he believes are not being well thought through. Here's a clip of what he had to tell listeners this week on FS Insider.
What is different this time? Normally you get the flight to quality. the money moves from the private sector, rushes into government bonds. Right now, they're selling government bonds. So governments are overburdened with debt. They can't lower interest rates anymore. They've killed the Keynesian model idea. So eventually what will happen, capital is going to look at this and go, I'm better off with shares of IBM than I am with government debt. And then it flips. And then it's all a confidence game. Then it flips and there's slingshots back the other way. So coming down this fast in a shorter time span, like I said, we're about double the percentage movement in time from 1929. And that's good because it means you're getting it over with quicker. But the damage to the world economy here, you have everybody shutting down businesses and things of this nature without contemplating the cost of this. You're risking people basically losing more from starvation than you are from anything else. You can't shut the entire world economy down like this.
To listen to this and all of our other FS Insider interviews airing 3 days a week, just go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Do you dream about throwing out the alarm clock so you can travel, enjoy your hobbies, or just relax? You've worked hard for decades and want to cash in on all that hard work. Now it's time to develop a plan that can help you get there. Give Financial Sense Wealth Management a call today to get your retirement plan started. We can help to make sure you have the income you need to live the lifestyle you want, how to maximize government benefits from Social Security to Medicare, reduce taxes and plan for future inflation, or protect your assets with an estate plan. Don't leave your retirement up to chance. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management today at 888-486-3939 or email us at grow@financialsense.com.
Well, if you watch the stock market, daily charts and what is going on in the market resembles a wild roller coaster ride. Where will this go and where are we heading? Joining me on the program from Trend Investor Pro is Art Hill. And Art, I want to start out with the VIX. It's hard to believe about a month ago, the VIX was around 12. And here we are in the day you and I are speaking, and it's almost at 80.
Yeah, it's truly been a historic run as far as volatility is concerned. And you can see that reflected in, I look at the one-day rate of change, and it's just kind of megaphoned as far as the, you know, swings up and down get bigger and bigger over the last 4 weeks it's progressed. And that's reflected in the VIX as it goes, you know, from the 12-13 area all the way to around 85. As the market went straight down. So, you know, the VIX is a pretty much a coincident indicator, but it has, you know, usually in that 40, 50 area, you're going to get your bounce. But this time we didn't, and the market just continued straight down. So it is at extremes, but, you know, we've been in extremes for a while. So I don't know how valuable it is at this stage, the VIX.
Let's talk about also where we've come. It's hard to believe on what was it, February 19th, we were at almost record highs. And Art, this bear market has been achieved and has taken place in a period of 3 and 4 weeks in what used to take 3 to 6 months in previous bear markets. So let's talk about that and what you're seeing, because I have not seen anything like this in my career.
So yeah, it was 30% basically in less than 4 weeks that the S&P 500 declined. And if you put, say, a zigzag 30% indicator on the chart and you go back, you're going to come up with the 87 crash and you're going to come up with the two bear markets from 2002 and 3. And 2008 and 9. And of course, we did stabilize in 87 after the crash and had a period of choppy trading following that. And I would think that's our best case scenario right now is a period of choppy trading as the news flow starts to really roller coaster from, you know, there are just a whole bunch of possibilities out there in the coming weeks, a bunch of uncertainty. So we could get a big trading range. And even after the, we had a crash as well during the bear market in 2008, where the market fell 30% in a very short period of time and then moved into a volatile range. And so those are the two periods I think we can most correlate to what's happened right now. And both of them point to, at best, a bunch of volatility like 87, or at worst, volatility and then a move lower again, as we did in 2008 and 9.
So when you look at this and, you know, you're talking about, if you look at all the markets, whether you look at stocks, whether you look at bonds, whether you look at commodities, and even some places currencies, this is one of those times, and maybe we can talk about this. Typically, when stocks are down, you see bonds are going up. You know, it's a safe haven. We'll get out of the risk trade. We move over to the safe haven trade. But my goodness, Art, if you look at the bond market and if you're looking at the treasury market and gold market, I mean, they're as volatile as what we've seen in the stock market. It's hard to believe a couple of weeks ago, the 10-year treasury got down to 0.3%. And here we are, you and I are talking on a day where 10-year treasuries are 1.1. I mean, that's a hell of a move.
It is. It is a hell of a move, definitely. And I was looking at TLT, which is the 20-plus year treasury bond ETF. And in the history of the TLT, which goes back to 2002, the range has never exceeded 5% for a one-day move on the upside or the downside. And as you saw this week, we had a 6% gain and a 6% loss back-to-back. And those were the biggest gain and loss back-to-back in the history of the ETF. And I was looking back further, back to 2002, and we basically had a five-day move where TLT advanced 10% prior to that 6% decline that we had this week. And there were two other times that this occurred. It occurred towards the end of 2008, and TLT fell really sharply after that. And also in the third quarter of 2011. And then TLT kind of went into a choppy range for about 6 months and actually pulled back a little bit. So, but volatility, I think, is not my friend as far as I'm concerned. You know, there are traders that thrive on volatility, but, you know, Trend Investor Pro is the name of my website, and I'm looking for trends. And when it gets this volatile, I usually step back and wait for things to calm down. And that's happened in gold, that's happened in bonds, and that's happened in the stock market. I mean, I don't know if you've looked at GDX, the gold miners ETF. It's crazy the moves that that ETF has had over the last few days.
And let's talk about that, because you mentioned that in one of your pieces you put out. How in the heck can you trade or look at charts when you've got, as you mentioned, GDX up 10% one day, down 10% the next day? I mean, how can you chart that?
Yeah, that is we were talking before we started how some chartists started out doing charts by hand. And I actually did start doing charts by hand in the 80s. And I went through the bear market in 81. And what you would have to do in the bear markets when things went down is you had to cut out some paper and tape it onto the bottom of your chart so you could go lower because you ran out. But now, you know, with stockcharts.com, it automatically adjusts and there's always going to be enough room. But when it gets this volatile, it does. It totally skews the charts, and it is hard to make that analysis. And so you pretty much have to step back and look at a bigger picture to filter out that volatility a little bit, or maybe just move to a line chart instead of a bar chart or a candlestick chart.
Yeah,
I'm
looking at the tough GDX, and if this was my EKG, they would probably be rolling me into the ICU unit. I mean, it is, I've never seen anything like this. And you're right. I mean, this reminds me to some extent, Art, and I'd like to get your comments on this. In 2008, when we had the Lehman crisis and you had the Treasury holding press conferences, the Fed, the president was holding press conferences, it was like there was no place to hide. If you were in gold, you lost money. If you were in currencies, you lost money. If you were in stocks, you lost money. If you were in emerging markets, you lost money. Corporate bonds, about the only safe place was like treasury bills and a bank account. And the amazing thing about bank accounts, the banks were all insolvent. They had to be bailed out. We're almost in a period unprecedented. I don't know where you live, but where we're at in California, we're known for traffic jams. You can get on the freeway today, and there isn't much traffic because everything's closing down.
Well, Jim, I'm in Belgium, and we're on pretty much total lockdown. And we have been on total lockdown since Friday at midnight last week. So nothing is moving here. People can go for a walk in the park or a jog, but that is about it. But going back, you know, and if you compare, every bear market is different. And the 2000 peak was the dot-com bubble. And in that bear market, we had 9/11 happen. So that was caused by excess and then 9/11. And it took a long time to bottom from 2002 until March, say the July 2002 to March 2009. There was a big bottoming process there. That was a long, choppy range, basically. And then 2008 was, of course, the financial crisis. And gold and bonds did not act that great. They didn't. They weren't a consistent alternative to stocks during that period, whereas, you know, gold and bonds performed better in 2001 during that bear market. And now we've got a different bear market and a different reason. So you want to go with the playbooks from before, but they don't always work because it's always for a different reason. And I think the banks are okay this time. You know, they've shored up their balance sheets. They're not as in the situations they were in 2008, but we are looking at a probably a recession. Well, definitely a recession, most people say. I don't know how bad it'll get and how long it'll extend, though.
Well, and that's the other thing. Maybe this is what the market is discounting because, you know, a month ago we were at, 3.5% unemployment rate. I would be surprised the next time we get a report that the unemployment rate is doubled. You can't shut down sporting events. Big malls are shutting. Nordstrom's shutting down.
The airlines.
Airlines are shutting down. Restaurants, bars, companies are staying home, telling people to stay inside. At my age, I'm quarantined to my home. You know, I can't see my grandkids. So people aren't going out spending money. And this is going to raise an interesting question when they talk about stimulus. If the government gives you a check, you got to assume that the stores are going to be open where you can spend that check. So it's going to be interesting to see how fast they can contain this. But as you mentioned, Art, every bear market is different. It was overvaluations and crazy valuations in the dot-com bubble. It was over-leveraged mortgages in the last bear market. And now this time it's really a health crisis. That's kind of a different type of crisis to try to contain, even with money.
Well, that is the main point. It's not like throwing money at this problem is going to solve it. It's time and it's the health of the nation, basically, that is the main issue here. Sure, the Fed has to step in and provide liquidity to make sure, you know, the plumbing of the financial system doesn't freeze up. That's definitely important. And Congress does have to do something fiscally to soften the blow because people are going to be out of work for a little while and companies are going to lose revenues. So something has to be done there. So something definitely has to be done to lessen the burden that everybody's going to be put under. But sending a check, I'm not sure is, that's kind of a Band-Aid on a broken arm, maybe.
This is really going to be an unusual type thing, but maybe the most helpful thing is somebody that's been laid off. I was talking to a client of mine who took her daughter and sorority sisters to Palm Springs on spring break. And she said Saturday night they were at a bar and restaurant. Sunday night it was closed. Another client, their kid just got a job at a restaurant as a chef, been working 3 months. He just got laid off. So, I mean, these are real. And when you think about this, Art, the chain of events, let's just take that restaurant owner. Restaurant owner lays off employees because restaurants are ordered closed. The employees now don't have a job. The restaurant doesn't have revenue, so they may not pay the landlord. Now the landlord isn't getting rent, so he doesn't make his mortgage payment on the building. And then somewhere that mortgage or credit cards by the restaurant employees are being held in a mortgage pool somewhere owned by a mutual fund, a pension fund, or insurance company.
Absolutely. All down the chain. The digital payments slow. There's less spending out there. So that's going to hurt even the the secular themes that are out there, you know, like MasterCard, digital payments is going to be a secular theme, but even they're taking a hit because of this slowdown.
So Art, as you look at this, we talked about the speed. How much, in your opinion, has been brought about by the way the markets have changed over the last decade? You've got algo trading that accounts for a lot of the daily trades. You have index funds that, you know, it's so easy to press a button on your laptop and get out of a position if you're sitting in a spiders or you're sitting in the diamonds, which are the Dow and S&P 500. How much of that is playing a role in this volatility and what we're seeing, these sudden downdrafts? I mean, it looks like a car was driven off a cliff.
Well, I think most of it is, sure, that's contributing to it, but you've kind of had all the buyers pull in their orders. No, there's no buyers. It's like the carpet's been ripped the floor's been pulled out from underneath the market because there's no buyers to support it. And so, you know, even if selling pressure isn't that great, if there are no buyers out there, it's not going to hold. And so I think that's contributing to it. And then you start getting at a certain percentage level decline, and then the algos kick in because they need to get out, or you have people that are getting, they're leveraged and their leverage has gone too far and they can't handle the heat, so they get out. So I think that is contributing to it. And if you look at the way bear markets and bull markets progress, you know, we're pretty much in, you know, a traditional bear market. This is the first leg, you know, and you still have a rebound to come, and then you have another move lower, and then you have maybe a rebound. And that third move lower traditionally is when you have the despair and the big bottom. So I think we're really in early stages of either, you know, it's going to take a while to build a bottom here and to get confidence back. So we've got a ways to go, I think.
Yeah, because usually when you have something this traumatic, and the only thing I can think of is, and this is what people are speculating on, when the recovery comes, will it look like a V-shaped recovery? Think the fourth quarter of 2018, market was down close to 20%. The Fed reverses course the first week of 2019, and this thing goes straight up. Or will it be an L-shape or U-shape recovery? And quite honestly, I don't think anybody knows at this point.
Well, yeah, nobody really does know. We're going by what has happened in the past. And as I said, in 2008, when we had that crash in October, it took a while for the market to stabilize. It's a very choppy range. In 2011, we had the European sovereign debt crisis. And after that plunge, it wasn't 30%, but the market went into a very volatile range. And also, of course, out of the 87 crash, we went into a very volatile range. So I think that's really the best case scenario, and then evaluate from there to see how it goes.
Art, from a technical perspective and your years of experience, what are you going to be watching going forward? What are the things you would want to see to know that we're close to the bottom, this thing is going to turn around? What are the things you're watching most closely here?
Well, I would be watching that consumer discretionary sector because, as you mentioned, these restaurants, these stores, they're closed and nobody wants to go out to spend money. And so I think that's the first group to watch to see if they start outperforming, if the consumer discretionary sector starts outperforming. And I'd also turn to the credit markets and watch to see if some of the spreads start narrowing there. That would be a sign that the credit markets are not getting as stressed. And that might be a sign that stocks are going to bottom. And then I would look for the sectors or industry groups that are holding up the best. The bear market rules apply now. We're not in bull market rules. But when we do come out of that bottom, you want to be in those groups that have held up the best at that time as we're coming out. But the first thing I would watch is the consumer discretionary sector because it is the most sensitive to this. And I would watch some credit spreads to see if the credit markets are improving.
So as we close, Art, why don't you tell our listeners about TrendInvestorPro.com?
Sure. TrendInvestorPro.com is my website where I do analysis. It's mostly focused on ETFs. I have a market timing model that I use every Friday. It's made up of 9 breadth indicators from the 3 major indexes, large caps, small caps, and mid caps. And it did trigger bearish at the end of February. And I also have an ETF ranking system. And I also published a report on Thursdays with a lot of detailed charts on our core ETF list, which has 60 ETFs in it. I don't do every ETF every week, but I like to single out a dozen or so that I think are standing out. Unfortunately, right now, nothing is standing out. So we're kind of in the macro mode where we're just looking at the broad market, bonds, gold, the dollar, maybe oil and stock.
All right. And Art, give out your website as we close one more time.
Yes, it is trendinvestorpro.com. And please come by. There are free articles and there are also premium articles for subscribers.
And trendinvestorpro.com, that's all one word.
Yes.
Trend Investor Pro. Art, thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe and come back and talk again.
All right. Great, Jim. You too. Stay safe.
Years ago, a book was released that warned of a global pandemic and specifically the consequences that this would have on the medical systems around the world, given the fact that so many different countries are highly dependent upon China for the production of many of the prescription drugs and life-saving medicines used by hospitals around the world. The title of that book is China Rx: Exposing the Risks of America's Dependence on China for Medicine. It's clear to say that this was a very prophetic book and a warning that U.S. lawmakers should have taken very seriously. Though they didn't at the time, they certainly are now, because she just got called in to testify before Congress last week. Here's a clip of what she told listeners.
Well, in the best of times before coronavirus, if China shut the door on exports of products, within a few months, our pharmacy shelves would become pretty empty. That's how dependent we are, and that's how dependent the rest of the world is. And that's because the world has concentrated production of essential medicines in a single country. We wouldn't do that for oil. We wouldn't have 80% of the world's oil supply in a single country, or 80% of the world's oil refining capacity. And we shouldn't have that for our medicine. So I hope that one thing that comes out of this whole situation with the coronavirus is that it motivates us to bring that manufacturing back home so we can make a basic level of critical medicines that are necessary for the functioning of our healthcare system, even in the best of times, let alone in situations like we're in now. Because think about it, the whole world is competing for the same pot of medicines, and I'm sure that China, wanting to take care of its own people, we know it withheld masks from export to other countries that was produced there, even by American companies. And I can imagine it would be prudent for them to do the same thing for medicines, to take care of their own people. So we really have a triple whammy here: a production shutdown, huge demand surge in China, and global demand surge. We have to fix it. We have to diversify our manufacturing base, and some of that should be coming back here to the United States for our health security and national security.
I would encourage everyone to go out and purchase this book. Again, the title is China Rx: Exposing the Risks of America's Dependence on China for Medicine. It is a wide-ranging, thought-provoking, and very eye-opening book. If you'd like to listen to this full interview with the author, Rosemary Gibson, on what we could be looking at in the weeks and months ahead, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Some are saying the daily machinations in the stock market resemble a roller coaster ride at Coney Island. Joining us out of London is Owen Tracy from Fuller Tracy Money. Owen, you wrote a book several years ago called Crowd Money. You really got into market psychology and sentiment. And I wonder if we could begin there, because what we're seeing play out on a daily basis reminds me of Ben Graham's analogy of Mr. Market, this person with this manic depressive personality, one day very pessimistic, the following day wildly optimistic. Why don't you enlighten our investors some of the things that you talked about in Crowd Money when it came to market sentiment?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are worth reminding ourselves of. It's that it's a market of people. There might be a lot of money involved, but it's people, by and large, making the decisions. And then, of course, the logical retort to that is, well, isn't the market controlled by computers these days? But one thing we know for certain is that those computers are still programmed by people, and those computers are just as willing and able to panic as people are. And that's a lot of what we've seen in just the last couple of weeks. The most important thing to remember about a crowd is that the more powerful the crowd is, the more emotional it becomes, but the less intellectual it becomes. So that's exactly what we've seen. We've seen that the market has become incredibly emotional, that it is whipping around in a very pronounced manner. It's really up one day, down 2 days for most of the last couple of weeks. And the size of the moves have been really rather spectacular. But that also has to do with how these computer programs are, in fact, created. It's built in the kind of response they have to stimuli. And the stimulus the kind of action that they are now being subject to is creating this volatility.
Let's talk about that, because it's almost what we've seen in probably the last 3 or 4 weeks is what used to take place over 3 to 6 months in a bear market. This reminds me a lot, Owen, of a bear market of 1987, where in 2 days the market lost 33%. Now we're down about 30 in about 3 or 4 weeks, but very similar to what we saw happen in 1987.
Very similar. At the time, back in 1987, the market was priced for perfection too. The difference, though, was that back in 1987, the market did pull back, but it did give us some warnings that it had been losing momentum. And it's also worth reminding ourselves that 1987 was the year that Alan Greenspan was appointed. Jay Powell was only appointed a year ago, and Christine Lagarde was only appointed a couple of months ago. So we also know that the market does tend to test new central bankers, because they represent a key piece of uncertainty. Nobody really knows which way they're going to jump in a crisis. So there's often a crisis manufactured to test them.
And as we've seen this, in what is remarkable, we did a piece called The Week That Changed America. I mean, if you just take a look at the last 7 days, the emergency dropped to zero by the Fed on Sunday, $1.5 trillion coming in stimulus last week, $700 billion of what you might call quantitative easing. The Fed is now intervening and setting up a mechanism to make sure that the commercial paper markets function. And you wrote a piece, "The coronavirus is temporary, stimulus is limitless." Let's talk about that for a moment, because $1.5 trillion followed by $700 billion of bond buying now this week working its way through Congress. We're talking about $1 trillion. And then we're also talking about other central banks following in our footsteps.
Well, they're talking about sending $1,000 to everybody. Now, you got to question, is that a once-off or is that every month? So, you know, when we start rolling out these kinds of stimulative packages, they do tend to balloon. And these kinds of things, let's just take interest rate cuts for an example. Before interest rate cuts, in fact, start to manifest themselves in economic data, there can be a lag of 6 months. It's unlikely we're still going to be sitting in our house twiddling our thumbs in 6 months' time because of the coronavirus. So there we already have an example of the fact that the coronavirus might be extremely difficult. It might certainly result in a lot of vulnerable people being in a great deal of distress, but it is not something that is going to last indefinitely. But we are now at a point where the USA, Europe, Japan, the UK, and Switzerland are on the zero bound. It's going to be difficult for them to get off the zero bound. We have these massive deficits that are being created, and everybody And I think this is probably the best way to think about the coronavirus is you take everything that people were worried about in 2019 and the coronavirus makes it worse. So one of the things that everybody was worried about in 2019 was modern monetary theory. Well, there's nobody worried about it today. The link between the central bank and the government is now absolutely concrete, and they're going to start printing and monetizing that debt. So that is something that they was on the cards a year ago, and that was before a recession. Well, now we're on the front door of a recession, and it is absolutely guaranteed that that is what we're going to have. And that's really just the beginning of what we're likely to see in terms of assistance for the economy.
Yeah, because I've been saying that this is stimulus part one, and we're more likely to see stimulus part two, three, and four. Who knows how many times they go at this? And I would suspect you would probably agree that we're probably likely to see some other form of stimulus coming from central bank. You know, the first round is $700 billion. But do they stop there, or could we see very much where the Fed's balance sheet is now at $5 trillion? By the time we're done, it could be at $10
trillion. I think that that is almost baked in at this stage. And it really started back in September because of the locking up of the repo market. And the repo market is much more international than the domestic market. It is where global banks lay off some of their risk and try to pick up an additional return on the overnights. So by locking up, because of a number of factors that have been building for years since the financial crisis, particularly because banks now have to hold bonds, they can't really play in the repo market anymore, so they're not active there. There was a lot less liquidity than the federal government was taking money out of the market because of taxes. It locked up. The Fed had to step in. And they printed $400 billion before Christmas. So that was in good times. What they had to do last week was to add almost $1.5 trillion to the repo market. That is basically the Federal Reserve backstopping the entire global financial system. It's no longer simply about the US banks. That is leaving the Federal Reserve's balance sheet open to unlimited liability. So when we start to think about the size of the balance sheet being at $5 trillion, $10 trillion, that is kind of missing the point, because it's completely open-ended. As long as the Federal Reserve is backstopping necessarily the repo market, then there is no limit on how much money they have to print.
After the 2007-2009 financial crisis, I think Bloomberg did a story where if you took a look at what the Fed was doing in expanding their balance sheet, driving rates down to zero, the quantitative easing, I think at one point during the crisis, they backstopped like $7 or $8 trillion. So, you know, it could be multiples of that this time.
You got to remember that back in 2008, it was bad, but it was really the epicenter of risk was the mortgage market in the USA. What we have right now is the entire global economy grinding to a halt. The way I'm kind of thinking about it is one of the best parallels is a hurricane. But the problem with using that as a way of thinking about it is that we've never had a hurricane hit everywhere at the same time. And that's what this virus is doing. So it is definitely having a deleterious effect on economies everywhere. We are going to see unemployment rise. There will have been thousands of people in the service sector lost their jobs yesterday. It's going to take 2 weeks for that data to show up in the weekly jobless reports. Part-time workers data had really peaked out about a year ago. Well, that is going to fall off a cliff in 2 weeks' time. So we're in a point in the market that is very interesting psychologically, because I will tell you that I pay a lot of attention to the conversations I have with people. So I was down at the UPS store on Saturday and doing an Amazon return there. And I was chatting to the guy who was probably about 25. And he was very proudly telling me how he had bought the dip in Microsoft last Friday. Then I was in the bank today, and the associate I was chatting with, he was telling me how he was getting ready to buy the dip today. I've seen any number of people talking about how ready they are to buy the dip. And of course, we have to remember that this has been a buy the dip market for the last decade. So buying the dip has always worked. And in a secular bull market, buying the dip will always work. Well, the number one confirmation that this is no longer a bull market will be when the buy the dip strategy fails. My fear is that we're there now. There's a lot of people want to buy. They want the bull market to persist. And we certainly have short-term oversold conditions. So we are due a bounce. And in a bear market, you can really get some big bounces. But considering the size of the pullback, we are likely to see a reasonably prolonged period of support building. But that is only going to increase the amount of money that is thrown at this market. And eventually, all of that assistance is going to create new bull markets, but probably not in the same sectors that have been doing well until now.
Could we see, Owen, just as this has been short and violent, I mean, if you throw enough trillions of dollars at the market as governments are doing now, either monetary or with fiscal stimulus, that when it does turn, it could be just as violent on the upside as it was on the downside?
I think that that is going to be a big ask, not least because there are going to be institutional investors are going to become pretty wary now. There's going to be a lot of people in cash, and we don't know how long a recession is going to last. The one thing that I would pay particular attention to is the credit markets. We have not seen defaults yet, and I think defaults are going to be inevitable. I would say the one sector that is most likely to experience a V-shaped recovery is precious metals. It is worth remembering that back in 2008, the gold market was not spared from selling pressure, but it bottomed early. And by the time we got to March 2009, when the S&P finally bottomed, gold was back at its all-time peak. And then it doubled from there. So there is definitely a number of assets that tend to do very well when governments are throwing caution to the wind and debasing their currencies with abandon.
Yeah, what did we do? We went from almost 1,000 to 1,900. And if you take a look at the monetary stimulus back then, and you compare where, you know, we haven't quite, I agree with you, I think, with the amount of layoffs that we're going to see in the next 2 weeks, that we're probably going to end up in a recession beginning in the first quarter, in the second quarter. And you just can't sit there and cut, you know, tell people to stay home, close down restaurants, bars, wineries, theme parks, sporting events. That's not going to have an event. But the amount of stimulus, I think, is going to be epic. We thought it was epic in 2007 and 2009. But now we have the theory for it. And both parties, at least here, seem to embrace it, which is, as long as it's in our own currency, we can just simply issue as much debt as we want and just simply print the money to pay for it.
Well, the reality is that that's true. As long as the velocity of money is deteriorating, then you can print as much money as you want because it's not going to result in inflation. But if inflation comes back, then it is going to represent a monumental problem. Now, there is no risk of inflation today because we have got the acute risk of deflation because the economy is slowing down. The tourist sector is going to take a hit now, but if the tourist sector misses a summer season, then that is going to blow out their whole year. So that is something that is going to have a really significant effect on the global economy, and particularly in Europe.
And when you think about it, as you mentioned, another couple months, summer vacation will be here. People are used to getting on airplanes, flying to Europe, flying to Asia, or Europeans coming to the U.S. What happens if this thing hasn't burned out yet?
Well, if it hasn't burned out yet, then there are going to be huge numbers of tourist businesses go bust. And there are going to be millions of people that are normally employed in seasonal work don't get employed. And that's going to have a significant effect on the economy. So we do need to monitor how successfully countries are dealing with this coronavirus. I think we should sort of think about what is the potential outcome going to look like. One problem is that you can't answer any of those questions until you are testing people multiple times and all the time. That's the only way that we're going to be able to get the data required to actually come up with an answer. The only country that has really got on top of testing is South Korea. And they started early. They tested millions of people and they tested them regularly. And that allowed them to get out in front of the growth in the virus. We're just not doing that here yet. We're not doing it in the US and we're certainly not doing it in the UK. And that does represent a very significant challenge.
What about the recent announcements about closing borders? It's my understanding that they're considering or thinking of doing it if they haven't already in Europe. And of course, you've seen where President Trump has now named the UK, Ireland, and Europe a travel ban coming here along with that of Asia.
Well, I think that would have been a really smart thing to have done for the whole world when they did it for China. But unfortunately, they only did it for China. So unfortunately, today it is really much more like closing the barn door after the horse is bolted, because we already have community spread in the US. So that's actually a more urgent problem because it's already here. The community spread in places like Seattle and San Francisco and New York are now at points where it is going to create a problem. But the bigger issue is we're not testing people. So that community spread is still going on, is not under control. People are still playing Little League. They're still going to small events. That's only just been stopped in the last 3 days. So this is going to get worse. The more testing we do, the worse the news will get. The big thing we need to watch is not about the number of new cases, because that is going to continue to rise. It's the growth in the number of new cases. If it continues at an exponential rate, then there's no evidence that the problem has been under control. If the growth starts to slow down, that tells us that there's progress being made in dealing with this challenge. And I suspect that's when we're going to get a real bottom in the market.
All right. Well, given what you see now as an investor, what would you be telling people?
Well, I think in the short term, we're due a bounce. There's a sufficiently large number of people that want to buy the dip. They're going to buy the dip. They're going to be encouraged by all the money that is being thrown at this market. And I think it's likely we're going to get a bounce. I think if there was anything you wished you wanted to sell or is highly levered, or does not make money in, and I think this is the most important point, if there are companies you own that are not making profits and are going to have a difficult time getting through a recession, then any kind of bounce we get in the market should be really used as an opportunity to lighten up. Then there are also going to be companies that have already had catastrophic declines. There is real value there. They have got strong balance sheets. ExxonMobil is trading at a 10% yield or 9.8% yield. I remember my mentor in the markets, David Fuller, he often said that clearest evidence of value in the market in 1982 was the fact that ExxonMobil was yielding 10%. That's a company that's never cut their dividend. There are those kinds of companies that have had catastrophic declines already that still have strong income and balance sheets. Those, I think, are going to be the value plays where people will start to be attracted because of the security they offer, regardless of what else happens. But the problem for a lot of technology companies is they just do not make money. And that's a significant challenge in a recession. So they would be the ones I'd avoid.
As we close here, why don't you tell our listeners about the services offered at Fuller Tracy Money?
Fuller Tracy Money is a global strategy service. So we're always looking at what is happening out there in terms of the world. Where are the opportunities? where are the risks, and looking at multi-asset classes to think about how they affect each other so that we can get a lead into what is going to be the opportunity and where the problems reside. And you can find us on FullerTracyMoney.com.
All right. Well, listen, Owen, as always, appreciate you being on the program. And I might recommend your book, Crowd Money, as we close. Just tell our listeners briefly about that book and where they can find it.
Well, the book was published in 2013, but it's still on Amazon. It really focuses on crowd psychology, looks at the psychological perception stages of major bull and bear markets, thinks about what kinds of trends have been evolving, and I predicted back in 2013 that technology was going to be the big thing, that energy was going to have a hard time, we're going to have the rise of the global consumer, and those are still very powerful trends. But what it is based on is very clear and factual reading of charts.
All right. Well, listen, Owen, all the best to you. Stay safe and come back and talk to us again.
It's always a pleasure.
Are you tired of earning a minimal interest rate on your investments? Are you looking for a higher rate of return on your money? Financial Sense Wealth Management has put together a portfolio of high dividend paying blue chips, high quality interest paying bonds, and preferred stocks. Our income account portfolio is specifically designed to help meet the needs of retirees, pension funds, and foundations looking to increase income and reduce taxes. To learn more, contact us at 888-486-3939 or email grow@financialsense.com.
Today on Smart Micro, as always, we're going to be speaking with our Chief Investment Officer, Chris Paplava. Chris, it was a wild week in the stock market. I believe it was the worst week now since the financial crisis of 2008. I know that you've been continually on the phone with clients talking about what we're doing here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, what your outlook is on the markets. Have we seen a bottom? Lots of really good questions that we're going to get through today. But let's just start off in general. What is your take on what we saw in the markets this week?
This week and even late last week on Thursday, it had the feel of very similar to October of 2008. I think this past week may go down as the peak in terms of volatility, possibly even credit spreads. I saw a lot of deleveraging. And over the last 4 or 5 days, I'm starting to see, I took a look at the big S&P 500 ETFs from Vanguard, from State Street and from iShares, and I'm starting to see the volume begin to dry up. So I do feel that we're getting closer to a recovery rally. The selling pressure is beginning to dissipate. The corporate bond traders, I'm hearing liquidations coming from mutual funds, from ETFs, as retail investors are panicking and dumping their funds. And so they're trying to meet redemptions by selling some of their quality names. So we're seeing where some of the better names, the higher quality names, are getting dumped because you can sell them versus some of the lesser quality names that you don't want to sell at a deep discount. And so, for example, just yesterday, one of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies, they have a 2-year bond and they're A-plus rated by S&P, and their bond matures in 2 years. And last week, this bond was trading at 104 cents on the dollar. And it was yielding 1.2 until maturity. And we saw, you know, millions being dumped, and it was selling at below 98 cents on the dollar. And we were able to pick that up, an A-plus quality paper, and we were getting north of a 4% yield to maturity on a 2-year A-plus quality name. Saw that today in the bond market, just mass liquidations as people meet redemptions. And this dislocation that we're seeing does create some opportunity. Looking at also the municipal market, one of the dealers that we work with essentially told us, name our price, because they've got so much in municipal debt that is being dumped. And a lot of that has to do with people who have margin accounts, hedge funds, and institutional players, where they buy municipals. And I believe you can leverage, draw margin on that roughly 70-80%. And they're doing that, and they're making investments in riskier securities. And as they're getting margin calls, they're having to dump their muni bonds to make those calls. And so there's been a flood of municipal bonds being dumped on the market. And that's partly why we heard that the Fed is going to be able to start buying municipal bonds because of this deluge of bonds are being dumped. So I am seeing, and I think that's the why we have such an intensity on the selling, is a lot of this is investors who are having to meet margin calls, and it's forced selling. And I think last week was probably panic selling. And I think we had a lot of the retail crowd panicking last week. And I think what we're seeing is institutional players and those on margin and leveraged being forced to sell.
What is it that you're looking at to know that we've reached a bottom in the markets? And do you think that we are anywhere close to that yet?
One of the things I want to see is the credit markets. I want to see spreads begin to come down. And that would be an encouraging sign. I want to, you know, watch it for a while, not just, you know, a little bit and seeing it come down for a few days, because we might have further spikes higher. But I want to see a clear trend that credit spreads have started to ease. That would be an encouraging sign. I also want to see the breadth of stocks that are falling begin to dissipate. So that would tell me that less and less stocks are participating on the downside. And one of the things that I did last week is I looked at the Dow 30 stocks. And I wanted to see what percentage of them bottomed in 2008 versus those that bottomed in 2009. And what I found was about 23% of the Dow stocks bottomed in October of 2008. Most of them actually on October 10th. That was when the VIX spiked to its all-time high. And we saw a wave of selling. It's one of the worst weeks we've had in that crisis. And that was, to me, the panic lows for the market. Not the low, but the panic lows. That's when we saw stocks start to bottom and never hit new lows. That's when credit spreads began to contract. And that's what I'm looking for. And I have a feeling that this week and late last week could go down as the panic lows. Maybe not the price lows, but I think we could have seen panic lows. And let me give you an example in terms of some of the value that's being created that wasn't there just a month ago. I'm looking at California munis. And a three-month Cal Muni, a general obligation bond, was yielding about 0.5% for a three-month. You go out 5 years, and you're still not even getting a 1% yield to maturity. You essentially have to go out 7 to 8 years to get a 1% yield on a California Muni. I looked at where we, and this was on February 1st of 2020. So I took a look at where yields were then and where they are today. And you can buy a three-month Cal Geo and get north of 2.5% tax-free. You can go even out to 3 years and lock in about a 2.5% yield. If you go out further, for example, if you do maybe a 15-year, now you're getting over 3% on California general obligation bonds. So there's clearly some dislocation in the market that is creating value that I haven't seen since 2008. Even in the junk bond market and in the investment grade market, a lot of the pressure I'm seeing in the A-rated paper and triple B paper is in the longer maturity. So from 15 years onward, are seeing some of the biggest spreads in terms of increasing yields from where they were just a month ago. And looking at the highest quality junk, which is double B, that's one notch below investment grade. A lot of the spread is or increase in yield has actually come on the short end. For example, you know, February 1st on a double B bond, a three-month double B bond was yielding just under about, let's say, 2% or 2.5%. You can get a three-month junk bond yielding over 7% right now. And if you go to a three-year junk bond, it was yielding around 3% on a three-year. Now it's back to about, it's at 7%. So you can go short as 3 months, get a double B bond, and get over a 7% yield to maturity. So there's been an incredible amount of value that's been created. I'm looking at certain spreads that are the highest that they've been since the 2008 crisis. For example, looking at junk bonds versus a 10-year treasury, the currently we're almost at a 10% spread between a 10-year junk bond versus a 10-year treasury, meaning that junk bonds are yielding almost 10% more in yield. And how this compares to other credit crises we've seen, when oil collapsed through 2014 through 2016, and we went all the way down to below $30 a barrel, at that point, we saw the junk bonds yielding probably close to around 7% above a treasury. And during the Euro-Greek crisis in 2011, they were also yielding around 7% above treasuries. We're currently yielding just under 10%. And you have to go all the way back to the financial crisis of 08-09 to find junk bonds yielding this much compared to treasuries. So there's a lot of value out there. But again, I don't know. We haven't peaked. I'm still seeing a lot of spreads continue to head higher. So I'm not seeing a peak yet in spreads. But there is a tremendous amount of value that's being created as things are sold aggressively.
So it sounds like you're saying you don't think that we actually have reached a bottom in the broad market indices when we look at the stock market, comparing this to October of 2008, when we saw a large number of stocks individually see a bottom, but we didn't see the actual broad market indices eventually bottom until March of 2009. So it still took a number of months before the final bottom came in the market. But selectively speaking, there's a number of issues. There's a number of stocks that it sounds like you're saying do provide value because of the panic that we've seen come in that you're nibbling at, but you're still not saying this is the bottom of the market.
That's correct. You know, we have to see a few more days to see if spreads start to come in. But it feels like to me that I would say this week would probably be close to October of 08 in terms of intensity of selling.
Can you broadly tell us how Financial Sense was invested going into the major declines that we've seen in the market over the past few weeks or month or so, and what your plans are and what you're going to be watching specifically to determine how you're going to be making a lot of these moves going forward?
Once the market began to roll over and the internals for the market were rolling over, we began to sell our riskiest positions in certain sectors, mostly cyclical sectors. And we raised cash to a neutral level because we had above neutral equity exposure. And then we went from a neutral equity exposure all the way down to a minimum. So we've had a fairly low exposure to the market in terms of our objectives, where we're at a minimum risk posture. But what was surprising was the speed with which this has happened. And prior to this, you know, we were looking at a global upswing based on the amount of stimulus that was being applied last year, with interest rates falling, the Fed beginning to expand its balance sheet, that we felt interest rates would be rising this year. But that quickly turned once this outbreak began to really gather some steam in late January going into February in China. But with interest rates as low as they are, and we are seeing the Treasury curve off the lows. For example, the 10-year Treasury, I think, hit an all-time low of less than 30 basis points, and a 30-year Treasury went all the way down to 1%. Both of those are off their lows, where the 10-year Treasury is higher, the 30-year Treasury yield is higher than where it was. So that's why I think we may have seen the peak in the panic in terms of selling, where Treasury yields are now off their lows. The VIX volatility index is off of its highs. So those are encouraging signs. It's short term in terms of what we've seen in the last 2 days. So I want to see this continue. But that is encouraging that, you know, we might have a relief rally here in the works. But I don't think it's going to be the bottom. We've started to this week with the panic selling where the market's down 10% in a single day. We were putting some of our cash to work in quality names. We've been buying companies that we haven't seen valuations this low since 2009. In hindsight, anyone would want to have bought at the low in 2009 when the market was bottoming. But we're actually given that opportunity right now in select names. So we don't know where the bottom is, and we know we're not astute enough to time that perfectly. No one is. So we're not trying. But we are wading back into the market slowly. So we're averaging back into this market so that we don't miss these opportunities that are arising.
Chris, I want to ask you about some of the things that the Fed has done in response to this massive market decline. Central banks around the world are throwing everything in the kitchen sink at the markets, trillions of dollars of stimulus on the monetary side, on the fiscal side. I don't think we've seen such a swift reaction by policymakers to the extent that we've seen. What are some of the things that you're looking at that where we saw most of the stress occur in the markets, and how the Fed stimulus or, you know, even fiscal stimulus is responding to that?
Well, we've seen the Fed obviously cut interest rates, and they've started to launch some QE programs. What was encouraging is the Fed earlier this week was backstopping money markets, and they were backstopping commercial paper, One of the areas of stress that I was seeing consistently building this week was in the currency market, where there was a shortage of dollars globally, in terms that I was seeing foreign currency selling at steep discounts in terms of currency swaps to the US dollar, which was showing, again, signs of stress. But as the Fed opened up currency swaps with other central banks, I have seen some improvement on that front, where some of the currency basis swaps are starting to go back to more normal levels. And they're clearly off of their worst levels that we saw this week. So I do think the Fed is getting involved in the currency market to relieve some of the pressure there. They're getting involved in the commercial paper market. Now we heard today they're getting involved in the municipal market. So the Fed is taking aggressive actions to stabilize the financial system, which is encouraging that they're acting this quickly and not waiting. But if, you know, we continue to see stress in other areas like the corporate market, corporate bond market, who knows? You know, the Fed may begin to move into those areas. But, you know, this is a very dynamic situation, so we're constantly monitoring this. But we are hopeful that we may have seen a near-term bottom, or we're very close to one. Looking at the number of stocks that are hitting new lows on a one-month, three-month, and one-year basis, I am seeing that contract from the peak levels that we saw last week. So that, again, is an encouraging sign that fewer and fewer stocks are hitting new lows. And that leads me to believe that we may see a short-term rally to relieve some of this pressure in the near term.
Well, Chris, as always, if any of our listeners want to get in contact with you to discuss your outlook or how they can take advantage of our investment services, what would be the best way for them to do so?
They can call me at 888-486-3939, or they can shoot me an email at chris.paplava@financialsense.com.
Chris, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. We look forward to speaking with you on our next edition of Smart Macro in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.